Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn. How deeply grateful I am you chose to be with me on this 15th day of June 2019. And we're going to be looking at what I would like to know. Everybody sent me a little beautiful emails, and I'm very grateful for them. Their emails about their questions, their phobias, their foibles. Sometimes they are challenging me, which is always good. Looking at maybe their life from a different point of view or trying to. But in this particular program, I chose different subjects that people offered to me about things they just basically like to know, little things they think is important to them and they'd like to know. And I thought that would make a wonderful program. And so here we are. We're going to do that today. And I need to remind you, because I have to pay the bills here, that your donations are vital and important. Without your tax-deductible gifts, we cannot pay the radio bill. We cannot do any of the things we do on Aspire. My hospice work, as well as these radio TV efforts that we make to serve humankind. And if you have enjoyed our radio program here or our TV programs that you can see on the website at aspire.org, then I hope you will make a contribution and allow us to continue to make this an important part of your life and the world. I hope that you will see the value of it. For your donation, you will receive many wonderful gifts. And if you go to the website at aspire.org, you will see down at the bottom it says, why support Aspire? And if you click on that, it'll tell you why. It'll give you all the particulars you need to know and everything you might not ask or might be thinking and wish you could ask. It's all there for you, and I hope that you will avail yourself of it. Your donations matter more than you may think, and you do far more good in them than you may think, for the simple fact that your donations aim at people like yourself who are sincere, looking for the way, maybe finding the light in you and changing this world a little bit, just a little. I don't know if we can really all understand the contour and the context of spiritual work, but it can change many things in our lives. I mean, many. Let's go to the first question here from John. What I would like to know is why we are here. I don't really get it, and sometimes I hear people tell me there's no reason for life or purpose. So if there isn't, why are we here, John? Well, John, I don't know why you're here, okay? Because everybody's here on this planet for various reasons. We're here due to our karma. We have lived in past worlds and past lives many, many times. We have been the gamut of many things on this earthly plane in our many incarnations. And a lot of us are not done here. We're just simply not done. There are many things that we need to do that we seek to deal with. Maybe some of it has to do with your past I hate to say this, behaviors, things that have happened, things that you and I have done that have not been about working towards the awakening of who and what we really are. And because we don't really take that too seriously, because we look at our life and we think to ourselves, well, I have enough to contend with what is before me, we don't recognize we've been down these kind of roads many, many times in our life experiences. People are afraid to talk about reincarnation. Frankly, I am not afraid to talk about it. I have a few memories of things here and there that click to me about why I'm here. I don't know specifically why you're here, but I can give you a broad brushstroke if you wouldn't mind, if that wouldn't be too presumptuous of me. We are here for the sake of love. It is, the old saying is very true, it is all about love. Everything we do, everything that we enter into in this world, everything that we face in this world, it is all about love. It is not about anything less than love. This love is more than my emotionality can handle. This love is about the richness of the goodness of my being. And this love is the essence of my, the nature of my soul. A lot of people don't understand the nature of the goodness of life. What we often call a God is really the soul. And we don't really understand much about our souls because we don't really care to. It isn't in our manuscript and our head what we're here to do and what this is all about and what our soul is. We just, frankly, we don't care. We don't get it. We don't want to get it. It doesn't seem to be pertinent to our survival. And anything that's not pertinent to our survival, to us, just isn't worth having or doing or living or trying to accomplish. I have seen many, many people who just don't see the value of their soul. They don't get it. I can't make a person understand this thing called the soul, but it is, in essence, the nature of what you would call God in your life. And if it is true what millennials think, and many do, I guess, from what I've read in statistics, that there is no God, it's just, you know, every man or woman for him or herself, then who created all of this or what created all of this and who determined that it would be every person for themselves? There has to be some kind of order to the whole thing. And for now, that order doesn't seem to be too important to human beings at all. Just doesn't seem important. That's a sad thing, you know. That really is a sad thing. Because there is so much more to this life than the survival mechanism we live in. And if you can understand or tolerate or be compassionate enough inside yourself to understand what I'm talking about here, you could literally change your whole life by understanding everything that is here is geared, dear John, to the whole mechanism of love. And if you let love live you, if you allow for love to live inside you, if you allow for kindness and compassion to live inside you, then you have something very special. If you don't have that kind of mechanism in you where you see that or can feel that there is more to this world than just eating and surviving and procreating children and all of that mindlessly, then you have something to consider. It's the rock in your shoe, the pebble in your shoe. It will cause you to maybe explore outside the lines of your ideas, ideals, and the excuses people have, which will be, well, there's only this world and there's only this life, and live it to the fullest and forget the rest and don't worry about who you hurt or what you do. It's just immaturity, okay? It is a life directed out of a deep sense of immaturity, narcissism, and it doesn't work because everything we do matters. I had a friend of mine who was on a bus going to work, and he looked up, and there was a billboard that said, "Nothing matters." Now, you may feel like nothing matters, but I'm going to tell you that's just not true. And I'm afraid that's the slogan we see more times than not, nothing matters. So, John, why are we here? You're an entity right now, an entity that has gathered a lot of moss, rolling rock, gathering moss, as it rolls down the hill of life and back up and back down and birth and death and birth and death and birth and death over and over and over again. You and I have accumulated a lot of barnacles on our Bailey here, and we're here to knock a few of them off with kindness and love, with consciousness, the depth of consciousness, and achieving a sense of consciousness rather than just rolling around and trying to pleasure our bodies and pleasure our minds with ideas, ideals, beliefs, and theories that simply don't matter. So I have a saying that I use with my students, let love live you. So I'm saying that to you. Let love live you. I wish you well, John. And this meeting that you and I had, it mattered. Please forgive me. Namaste. Next one comes from Craig. He does not tell me where he lives. Why do I do what I do? It's confusing to me. Sometimes I feel like acting one way, and then I act another, and then another. Why do I do what I do what I do? He says, Craig. Well, Craig, if you read the book, Behave, you will understand. People like to think they have choices. They don't. People do not have choices. We live biology, and we live as biology in biology. My body is preset to live, eat, and die the way it's going to live, eat, and die. And it is set by my genetics, my DNA. And this is something that, you know, people have wrestled with a lot in their lifetime, in their lives, looking for a reason as to why we live the way we do, how we live the way we do, the way we live. And we struggle with this constantly in our life, absolutely thinking that, oh, I made the decision to go over there, or I made the decision to do this, or I made the decision to do that. None of that's true. It's all in your genetics, in your genes, in the chemistry of your brain. And if you read the book, Behave, you will understand why in your own biology you are the way you are. It is a very difficult thing for people to understand. In that book, you read, and you know, I have talked about this for many, many years, many years. People ignored me, rolled their eyes, said I was crazy, because the message is kind of negative to most people's ears. They like to make it negative. They think they're in control of their life. You're not in control of your life, nor am I. We are here in this human body like a car that is being run by a drunk driver. And it is going all over the place. You think, you know, you've made money, or you have people like you, or you think that you've been a success, or you think you've been a failure and people don't like you, blah, blah. Whatever you think, it's all preferences, interpretation, and opinion. Whatever is happening according to your genetics and the things that are going on in your genetics, and what you've had to sacrifice to have those genetics be very important to you. It is said that Gautama Buddha, when he was born, had a choice. He was either going to be a great, great king, a great politician, a great leader, or he was going to be a great spiritual leader. He was going to discover beautiful and wonderful things for humankind to help the masses. His father was very, very upset over this because he wanted him to be a great king and be the heir to his throne. But Buddha, well, Siddhartha at the time, decided that something else was more important than that. He made a choice to go against the grain of his body, his biology, his genetics, his DNA. He went against it, and he learned a great deal. Now, you have to understand, to go against it takes a tremendous amount of inner effort. Most people on this planet are not ready to do any of that, which is why the world is the way the world is, without soul, without any interest in the soul, only thinking in terms of what I want, what I can get, and how fast that can all happen for me. Now, the reason we are the way we are in this regard is a terrible thing, because we're biology and we live as biology. You talk to people, I talk to doctors here and there at hospice, and, you know, it's all about the biology. There is nothing else but the biology. There is nothing else but the logic of biology, and this goes on and on and on in people. There's a little bedside manner. I watch it all the time. You're just a piece of carcass there with the guy trying. The doctor is basically a mechanic, and he's making money. And he wants to know if you're on Medicare, what your insurance is, blah, blah. He isn't interested in you. Why? Not because he's an evil person, because he's not. It's because it's all about biology for him. It's all about being a mechanic. It's all about organs and stats and medicine and surgeries and money. Statistics are very important to him. And you know, the body follows a pattern, and the body is nothing but statistics. And you can follow the outcome of the human body real easily. It's there because it's predictable. And it does what it does because it has its own. But there is something that transcends this. Not everybody knows this, Craig. Evidently, you're starting to question this. Maybe you're on the cusp of this. Not everybody questions it. Most people do. Blah, 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 blah. They only appeal to their prejudice, their mental, emotional prejudice, which comes out of their genetics that are running their entire life. Even the idea of, you know, picking up a spoon is not your choice. I know you think it is, but it isn't. So as we go along and go down this road more and more, and you start to understand how your genetics work, how your biology works, how your mind works, and how attached it is to human emotion, and how a human emotion is attached to all sorts of genetic traits that we all have, that is when we start to understand consciousness, the need for it. Should you start to awaken ever so slightly in you to the part of you that is conscious, you will start to realize deeply that you live inside the body, but you are not the body. In other words, there is no I or me or you. There only is the name that your parents gave your body, the carcass, the meat suit that you live in, as we jokingly talk about it on Aspire. That's it. Now, what is contained within it? What is it that has that little, tiny, still, small voice in you that asks this question? There's some part of you that's still curious. This is a good thing. Most people don't have that kind of curiosity anymore. They don't care. You live, you die. That's it. You get, you don't get. That's it. You get what you can, and you take what you can any way you can get it. This is dog eat dog, as it is called, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Dogs have more. I love dogs, so you can't use that analogy, Greg. But there you are. You understand there is more to your life than you might think there is. The life, as Jesus said, is more than meat. The body is more than raiment. He's saying there's more to this whole thing. But the people don't get it. And when the Buddha decided to go, shall we say, into the spiritual path, he annoyed his father and his family to such a degree that they went in search of him. They were going to destroy him if they could, but they never found him. He lived in the outskirts of India, in the forest, in the woods, where it was hard to find people, and that's where he taught. But he had to keep on the move all the time because Family pride is very important. You are run, and I am run, Craig, if we're not careful, by instincts, human instincts. These instincts are not good. They cause war and devastation and pain and sorrow. And I am not here to tell you that these instincts are going to change or be made better or whatever, because they're not. You have to understand the nature of your life, the meaning of your life, and sustain that through your spiritual practice. You have to awaken. And who wants to do all that, really? Especially when there's so much to do on Twitter and, you know, videos and booths. I saw this TV program yesterday. I was scanning a Showtime, and there was this one on millennials. And I have to tell you, I'm interested in what millennials are about, very interested. And it was quite shocking. I'll tell you, it really was, at least for this old Jew. Anyway, please forgive me, eh? Namaste. Next question. Why do good people die young? This is from Linda. Why do good people die young? Well, I don't know if all good people die young. It appears that that might be true here and there. It depends on the people and what they're doing and what their life is all about and, you know, what their living is. I don't know what you meant by good people. Are you going to say that, you know, all of us are good or all of us are bad, or there are particularly good people and not particularly not so good people? I don't know what you mean. If you're talking about people who tried to make a difference in this world, the Mahatma Gandhis, the Socrates, even the Kennedy boys who tried to do some things, and Dr. King, who definitely tried to do, you have to understand change against the grain of human survival is not a popular thing at all. It does not lend itself to being, shall we say, politically and socially acceptable in our world. We like people who basically have our best interest in mind, or we share some sort of greed with each other, and that is our best interests. So we live in that realm. You know what I mean? It's like you scratch my back, I scratch yours. That's the end of that. We move on. And that's the end of it. So why do good people die young? Because what you might be calling good, well, Mother Teresa lived a long time. She was certainly a wonderful person in the sense of all the things she did. We're all a mixed bag. Don't think there are good people and then there are bad people. There are people doing all sorts of things. And in the midst of every good person, there's something bad. And in the midst of every bad person, there's something good. You just can't, you know, put a blanket over everything. But such is the case that we like to do. And I can't stop it. One last question. Lynn, I hope that helped you. Please forgive me. This is from Linda, too. This was her second question, not Lynn. Why can't I be me, Linda? You are you. You can be you. I don't know what this you is, but there is no you. You is crazy. You is defined by, you know, your persona. You can be you if you want, but why? Why do something that foolish? Why not be that which cannot be explained, that which is different inside yourself, that is beyond your persona, your biology, your chemistry? Why not be that which is? And if you can find the is, you will find it in your heart. You will find it in the discipline to practice your heart over your instincts. If you practice your heart over your instincts, then you will see that you does not exist. There is only the is. And I got to go. I is out of time. I'm out of here. Please forgive me, all of you. Thank you for listening. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. Namaste.